Hello and welcome to the This Month in Forensics podcast for October 2019. I'm Phil Moore and here's a few things from the last month that I wanted to talk about. Of course, this isn't everything. The industry puts out a massive amount of content every week. So for everything that I can find, you can head over to thisweekinforensics.com. As it's been for the last few months, it's going to be a bit quicker than usual. I can't keep saying it's quicker than usual because, you know, I'm trying to keep it around 10 minutes. Might be more, might be less. We'll see how we go. A quick shout out again to Ladrina for her contributions during the month. Definitely has made my life easier. So please, Ladrina, stick around. And on to the show. Jerry at Forensics Ninja, has started a blog and she shares her research on what are called iOS snapshots. They're not exactly the same as, you know, the file system snapshots you'll see on macOS. These are more about the photos that Apple takes, the thumbnail type images, when you switch screens. And as a result, she did a lot of research, which Alexis Brignoni at Initialization Vectors developed into a tool for decoding information that will allow you to see what a user was seeing when they basically last shut the app, kind of thing, without, you know, necessarily closing it using that quick switch view option. It's really cool that you're able to tell, you know, the time that happened and what was on the screen at that time, because, you know, and the example she gives is you might see the camera app and that might be enough information that tells you where to go looking next, or it might be all that's left. And, you know, it's really, really good research. So if you do iOS forensics, place to go look. I'm going to butcher this, but Philip Pineda and Jay Masanuri, I'm sorry, at CrowdStrike, describe the wealth of data that can be found in the Mac OS terminal saved state files. And they show how to reconstruct these files to identify additional adversary activity during interactive sessions. They explain that these files are created by an Apple feature called UI preservation and can be really useful in cases where an adversary had performed some sort of anti-forensics. So they also advise that they've added a module to the Automactic tool that will allow you to automatically parse this. And it's definitely a tool I need to look at, because every time someone does some research like this and they build it into some sort of framework, it makes everyone's life really, really easier, much easier. So definitely worth checking out if you are dealing with compromised Mac systems. Also on the Mac side, Jake Nicastro and Willie Valentin at FireEye have written a lengthy article on examining the artifacts left behind by the Apple Remote Desktop application on macOS hosts. From memory, that Apple Remote Desktop application is one you have to install rather than one that comes natively, but I don't know, so definitely go look into that. And it's definitely something you'll have to remember if you are identifying that this application is installed on the system, to go and look at all of the different places that they walk through and show, you know, what they can reconstruct from that, which was really cool. Mike Cohen at Velocidex has written a few posts on using Velociraptor to triage a live host. Mike done it. He did a really great job on making the tool Velociraptor. Is a really kind of expansive tool. It's available for a lot of different things. But one of the things that he has made it do now is building off the CAPE repo that Eric maintains of all the targets that you can collect data off. You can now build a Velociraptor executable that captures, you know, whatever files you've told it to capture. So whilst with CAPE, you might say, all right, CAPE, you know, target collect file A, B, C, D in a target module. What you can do in Velociraptor that's really cool is you can actually package all of that up into a single executable. It's called repacking. And then you can give that to whoever. So we had a case where we had to go and collect data off a whole bunch of offline desktops. And, you know, I used CAPE to do that. But now with Velociraptor, you might be able to repackage that up into a single executable and then give it off to a variety of other people and just say, here you go, run this. It makes it a little bit easier. So Mike wrote three posts walking through how to build it, how to package it, and also I think it was how to upload the data automatically to Google Share of some sort, from memory. I can't remember exactly, but a really cool thing. If you use Velociraptor, and I implore you to have a look at it, definitely check that feature out. Heather Mihalik at Cellbrite shared a first look at iOS 13 along with her preferred method of extracting and analyzing the data. She also covered some of the changes in the data from previous versions to iOS 13 and what you will and won't get when you do an advanced logical acquisition. And always remember, enable encryption. On the Android side of the house, Yogesh Khatri at Swift Forensics looked at a method of backing up Android devices using the key value flag and all the additional data that you may be able to get by doing that. So he's written a few posts covering the format, as well as what you get when you back it up and look at call logs or Wi-Fi and system settings. So it's something interesting to be aware of. The beta of Volatility 3 was released, which also includes a web GUI, which is pretty cool. There were a huge amount of changes. I'm really not going to cover all of them, but I guess the takeaways that I took from it was apparently it's significantly faster. It doesn't rely on Python 2 anymore, and they've removed specifying a profile, so you can just run it against the memory image and it should, you know, be able to parse it without having to spend all that time generating the profile or identifying the profile rather. I saw a post during the week saying that they are still going to be maintaining the previous version of Volatility for a year or two, but ultimately, you know, you'll end up moving over to the next version, which has been released in a public beta. Arsenal Recon has posted a couple of really cool articles. One of them was on the basically BitLocker and its various states. So you can have encrypted and unencrypted, but you can also have kind of varying states within BitLocker where it may appear encrypted to your tool, but Windows says, no, it's fine, just unlock it and it's not a problem. Which kind of explains why sometimes you see some disparity with a, you know, an image that it's not encrypted when you mount it on Windows, but when you load it up into your tool, it can't interpret any of that data, which is very interesting. And apparently, I think it something to do with the tool has to be aware of how to display the data as well, which can be problematic, obviously, but just use Arsenal Image Mounter on Windows 10. You won't have the issue, I guess. The other article they shared was actually really good research to do with what's called the Office Document Cache. This is available when you are synchronizing documents with OneDrive or SharePoint. And I mean, Windows 10, I don't think you can not synchronize with OneDrive. It's kind of hard to not have that feature enabled, and hopefully people are using it, because then their data is backed up, but also it means that we will be able to recover interim versions of documents that are being synchronized. So that what they found was, I think it was up to 14 different previous versions of a document that was found in this cache. And they said that wasn't available anywhere else, which is very, very interesting. They released a beta tool for their customers. It might even be an alpha tool. So definitely something worth checking out if you're a customer. Jason Hale at Digital Forensic Stream takes a look at the effects on Windows 10 feature updates on a user's shell bags. Windows 10 feature updates generally screw up a bit of stuff. They also mess around with your event logs from memory. They definitely do something with your USB devices, and Jason has a tool for that as a plug. But yeah, with shell bags, you might see a whole bunch of updated timestamps that match when your update occurred. You might see the same thing with USB drives. All of them were connected around the same time, which is probably not the case. So something to keep in mind when you are doing your examinations. To finish off, over on my ThinkDFIR blog, I demonstrated how to use Eric's RECMD, which is his Registry Explorer command line utility, to find the MAC address of a computer using the registry, of all places. What I was able to find is actually Windows will store the MAC address in the registry of the various network cards, and using RECMD, I had 9,500 hosts or something to that. I was able to basically batch it and say pull out every single MAC address, which was really, really, really cool, and it was something that I guess would have been a bit harder considering the speed of RECMD would be much harder to do in a GUI-based tool, for example. And one of the other things I mentioned, and it kind of leads on well because I'm finishing up, is how you should support creators that you rely on. And the reason why is because I was shouting out to Eric's, at the time, Patreon, but he's just moved over to GitHub sponsors. So, you know, the general spiel that I give is if you rely on a creator for some reason, if they saying, you know, I would appreciate the sponsorship or the donations, I always think it's a reasonable thing to do. So I've decided, you know, I would like to use the platform to say, if you rely on Eric's tools, definitely go and throw him a dollar, because I know he'll appreciate it. And that's all for the month. Of course, this isn't everything. For everything that I've found, you can head over to thisweekinforensics.com. And as I just mentioned, sponsors and the pay-for-pay, the value-for-value model, rather, for those that are supporting me via Patreon, I very, very much appreciate it. So if you get a bit of value out of my work and you would like to give a little bit of value back, you can head over to Patreon and click on the links there. The Patreon supporters do get a little bit more. They get their links that I've mentioned throughout this podcast, as well as the time codes to make it easier for them to look up everything that I've mentioned. And thanks again to everyone that's donated. If you've got any suggestions or recommendations, you can let me know on Twitter. I'm at Phil Moore. And a special thanks to my friend Jeff Animatic on SoundCloud for letting me use his tracks. Thanks for listening, and I'll speak to you next month.